Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish reading a book, I do the review and stick it up here on the podcast feed. Oh, that's the idea, except this time around I've actually got a backlog of books to review, not because I've been particularly lazy, it's just that I managed to finish off two books within one day of each other, one an audiobook and one a real book, and then before I got round to reviewing them, I managed to finish off another book as well, which I'll talk about later on. First of all, quick note, everybody stop emailing me now, please, about Jack McDevitt's The Engines of God. A few podcasts ago, maybe two or three podcasts ago, I was trying to work out which book I've read which reminded me so much of Revelation Space, and of course it was Engines of God by Jack McDevitt. And actually people have emailed me about that novel earlier and said, hey, have you read this book? And I'm like, maybe, I don't know. And I was talking as well once about the idea of having a completely fixed income, so everyone gets a certain amount of income. I'm not going to go into the details now, but someone actually emailed me and says, oh, that actually happens in this book as well, sort of like everybody gets a certain amount of income from the government, and that means they can pursue whatever they want as well, and that's also in that series of books by Jack McDevitt as well. So thanks for all the emails. The other book that I wanted to find out about, where two spaceships go off and have a first contact moment with an alien spaceship that turns up around the orbit of Jupiter, and so still nobody has even attempted to tell what that book is. So maybe that's a book I imagined. Maybe it only ever happened in my head. Maybe I never actually read such a book, or maybe it's an older book and not so many people know about it. I don't know. So anyway, getting on to today's novel, this episode's novel, and that is called The City and the City by China Mieville, and it was published in 2009, and I think it's one of the books like the last book that I reviewed, The Wind-Up Girl, and this book, The City and the City, are both, I think, nominated for the Nebula Awards this year as well. So it's quite strange that I read so many books so quickly. Normally I wait for them to, wait a bit longer, for the buzz to die down about the books and the hype to die down, and then I'll read them later. Not through any plan or anything. It's just normally because I live in Germany, they don't arrive in bookshops, or I don't bother buying them in hardback. But this time I listened to this novel and The Wind-Up Girl as an audiobook, and because any audiobook from Audible pretty much cost as much as each other, like one credit, and it's a good way to get new releases, or newish releases, I guess. It's been out for a while already, but The City and the City, I did read and review one of China Mieville's earlier books, I think his first published novel, called Perdido Street Station, and I really, really enjoyed big parts of it, and I really, really didn't like big parts of it. So I was wondering what about this I might like. I really enjoyed the world building in Perdido Street Station. I really didn't like the story and where the story went as well. And I also really liked the earlier political parts of the book, because it was sort of like unabashedly political in some ways, but then later on in the book it sort of all fell apart. And the promise was there and the characters were good at the beginning and they sort of all fell apart by the end. So it was like, it was one of those weird half and half books where it could have been a four and a half star book, but it went on too long and lost its way, and by the end of it large sections were maybe one star or two stars. So in the end I had to give it quite a low rating. I think it was around about 2.5 stars, which meant very average, but just by the length of it, you know, it wasn't worth doing. So anyway, I picked up this novel, found it. I was thinking about reading it for a while, and then I thought, I was just looking through the Audible directory and was like, oh, what can I get? And I remembered this book that I wanted to read it. So I thought I'd give it a go. I'd try it out. And I'm very glad I did, actually, because it was pretty good. Let me get into it. The world. Now, I actually heard an interview with China Mieville. I think it was on a BBC radio podcast, and he was saying that it was a bit of a spoiler to give away the world and the secret to The City and the City, the two cities that they're in there. And I think I read this on some other comments about the novel as well, that it's sort of like, oh, you shouldn't spoil it by giving it away. However, it's talked about within the first three chapters of the novel itself. It sort of gives away the secret. So I think that if it happens in the first three chapters or in the first quarter of a novel, it can't be a spoiler. It's just a setup. And it is a nice little twisted that the build up to it is, but I'm going to spoil it right now because, like I say, this is what the book is about. The city in the city is two cities, or the world of this place is two cities, one called Bejan and one called Ulcoma. And they're very close to each other, to the point where they're actually laid on top of each other. And not quite sure why this is, and not quite sure how it happened to come like this. There's sort of like a dark ages in the history of these two cities. But what emerges is that there's two cities laid over each other, and some streets are in Bejan only, and some streets are in Ulcoma only, and other streets are between them, like shared between them, and some open spaces and some buildings are shared between the two cities, meaning that they're called a crosshatched area. But when you're in a crosshatched area, you're still only in one city, and there's actually only one place in the city where you can cross from one city into the other, even though you're always in one city, or you're always in both cities, what's called gross topically. So you're actually close by. So if you want to get from one building to the building next door, but they're in different cities, you could, if you want to, just walk around and through into the other door. But of course, nobody does that because there's this agency called Breach. And if you breach, it means you see something or do something which crosses the line from one city to the other. Even though you could be in a crosshatched area, so actually in two cities at the same time, if you talk to someone from the other city or see someone in the other city, it's known as Breach. And that is, in a nutshell, what this novel is about. It's about two cities in the same place, but the citizens never cross over from one city to the other. And it's not just that they don't cross over, it's they have this thing called unseeing and unnoticing. So if they do notice something, they immediately try and forget it and try and not look at it, and they can't let their gaze linger on the architecture of the other city or the culture of the other city or the people in the other city. And when they're driving, they can only really respond to other people, even though they've got to drive around the different things. Now, you might be thinking, this is a little far-fetched. This is a little bit silly. No city would ever be able to live like this. And to be honest, that's true, because I did find this more of a fantasy kind of novel, in that this isn't what people would do. It is pushing the limits of believability in some way. However, when I heard this interview with China Mieville himself, he also said that. He said it really isn't it isn't meant to be a realistic take. It's not meant to be sort of, you know, it's more of a thought experiment, what a city like this would be like, rather than saying scientifically this is a fact. However, when it comes down to it, there have been other thought experiments and other times that people have come up with ideas sort of like this in novels like, say, 1984, where you've got everyone being surveilled in their own home by televisions and things like that. And when it was written, that was pure science fiction or some kind of fantasy of the future. It was based very much on the sort of the totalitarian regimes that are around in the 1930s and 40s, when the and of course in 1948 when this novel was written, when 1984 was written, of course, and it was a comment on those kind of things. But the whole idea of the doublethink and the doublespeak and the peace, the Ministry of Peace and the Ministry of Truth and all of these kind of things, they were set up as it would have been a fantasy then. It would have been science, very speculative then. But as time goes by, we see more of those things coming into being. So I'm not saying that The City in the City is as good as 1984, but I'm saying that the idea, now that we look at it, go, oh, this is fantasy, this could never happen. But then you think, well, we've sure said that about other fantastic setups and things like that. So I really actually enjoy the world. Like I say, you've got these some parts which are total areas and some parts which are alter. Like, no, if something's alter, it means it's in the other city. And there's various reasons why I like this. One, of course, is because I live in Berlin and I've lived in a divided city. And, of course, there was lots of people wanting to cross from one city into the other, and I guess there was sort of like something like the Stasi, which is a bit like the Breach with the surveillance and people being stopped in the street and all that kind of stuff. That happens in this novel. However, this novel is a bit more gentle about it, because unlike divided Berlin, it's like everyone in Ulcoma and Bejan, these the two cities in the city, they seem to be quite happy with it, and they seem to be for the large part, they seem to be okay, and they really want their cities to be separated, even though they're not, which is a bit strange. So Berlin really doesn't fit the mold. And then I guess there's other places, like when I was in Israel, I saw a map of Israel in Israel, and anything the other side of the Green Line or anything outside of their territories was just left off the map. And I always find that quite interesting when cities or not so much cities, but countries, they show what's up to their border, and then they don't show anything outside their border as though it doesn't exist. And I've seen this on so many times, and I always find it very strange, because I guess I come from a country which is an island. So when you have a picture of Great Britain or a map of Great Britain, it doesn't really matter that you don't show what's outside of Great Britain, because as long as you include Ireland, the rest is just sea. So like it sort of makes the map messy. Whereas other times when I go other places, it's sort of it looks like an island. The countries look like an island, even if they're not. So that whole sort of like not seeing and not taking notice of what's outside your own borders, it's quite interesting there. But what really the city in the city appeals to me is that where I am now, I'm actually working on a cruise ship, on the Queen Mary 2. It's a very big cruise ship, and it's split into two cities. I say two cities. There's maybe, 2,000 guests and 1,000, maybe 2,500 guests and 1,000 crew and service staff on board. And it's very much like two cities layered over the top of each other, because they're taking up the same space. Some areas both crew and guests go into, and some areas are just for the guests, and except for the crew who work there or the staff who work there. And some areas are just for the crew and the staff, and guests aren't allowed to go down into those area or up into those area or across into those area at all. But they, you know, because like they have the crew areas, which, and they have their own lifts that run up and down through the ship, and they have their own corridors that run lengthways through the ship, and different things like that. So you've actually got this same kind of thing, and you get like the unseeing kind of thing. Like if you walk around on the promenade deck, and the guys and somebody's cleaning there, or they're outfitting they're testing a lifeboat, or they're doing a drill, or anything like that. All of that kind of stuff, you see it, but then you unsee it, because if the crew are doing a drill and you're a passenger, you don't need to worry about them at all. But in the same way that unless you're service staff and you're doing some other jobs, like you're an officer, you just ignore the passengers, you ignore the guests on board just as much as they ignore you. So you've got this whole kind of thing of work going on in one place and other people doing this and other people doing that, but they're almost completely separate. And me as a guest entertainer, I have a guest cabin and guest status, but then on most cruise ships, not on this cruise ship, but most cruise ships, I can just go into the crew area as well. So I get the good deal of using the crew instead. Net, but eating in the same places as the guests and having the same status as the guests, which is always a strange kind of place to be, but that's my job. And so I'm a little bit like one of the people who can go between the two different worlds of Olcoma and Bejan. And so that really appealed to me as I was listening to this audiobook while I was walking around the cruise ship and seeing people unsee each other and going from one place to another place. And these two places are gross topically close to each other, but you have to go through a circuitous route to get through there. And only so many people are allowed to be in two places in the same city, like that are otherwise very close to each other, one door away, but they're actually a whole other city away. So I actually really quite like that. It appeals to me, the whole world. However, one thing I didn't like about the way that this city was set up in the book was that it's demonstrated that it works, and it's demonstrated in all the little like I say thought experiment kind of things. It's sort of, okay, how does traffic work, and how does policing work, and how does breach work, this agency which stops people crossing over, and all, and how does architecture work, and what happens if one city is prosperous in one area and it's not prosperous. All of that's really good. I really enjoyed reading about that. But then and again, I don't want to give this too much away, but the whole way it's the reason why it exists and how it got to be how it is never fully explained. And I kept thinking it was going to be fully explained, but then I realized actually that's not what it's about. It isn't the story about how the two cities came to be divided or how the two cities merged together or what actually happened there. And I thought that was a little bit of it. I found it quite disappointing that I never actually got down to the heart of the matter, to the heart of the city, what was actually there, which was a bit of a pity. So that's the only complaint I really had about the world. Onto the story. The story is very much of a police procedural. You've got a dead body found right at the beginning of the book. And it's found, it's a body that was killed in one city and dumped in another city. And I don't want to give anything more away about the story than that. But what happens is that a detective called Borlu comes on board and he has to find it. He has to find the killer and has to work out what's going on. And of course, because it was a killing in one city and the body has been dumped in another city, Breach has to be called in, and there's all that kind of stuff going on there. The story itself is pretty decent for a kind of police procedural noir detective kind of thing going on there. I did find it a little bit obvious who the ultimate killer was in the way that I found it painfully obvious in the film Scream 2, which I might as well talk about this, that if you have a group of characters and they all have a function in a group, and then you've got one character who doesn't have a girlfriend and he's just a friend of one of the other characters, and you're wondering, like, well, okay, what's he doing there? Is there a reason for him to be here? No, he's just going around and he's just filming stuff and he's like a quirky guy hanging out by himself and he doesn't have much interaction with other people. And it's like, okay, so that guy there is the murderer. And then, of course, at the end, it's like, and he was a murderer. And there was someone else, of course, in Scream 2. You know, there's, again, don't want to give it too much away, but that film. But who I thought the murderer was going to be literally within the first, 15 minutes of the film, that's what it turned out. And here as well, I found it myself thinking, well, this is the murderer. And I was just pointing, this guy is the murderer. And then when it came, I found the ending quite restrained in a way, because normally at the end of a big detective novel, they're all like, and a big twist here, and a big twist there, and a big twist. And there were some good twists at the end of this novel. And there is actually something in the story that I really, really enjoyed, which I don't want to give away too much here. It was a very clever conspiracy, because that's what always happens in these novels, is that it's never just about who killed the body. You have to uncover a big conspiracy as you go along, and I actually really like that side of it. But the actual who was the murderer, I thought it was quite obvious from about halfway through, which is a real pity. But otherwise, it is a decent story, but like I say, the setup. What I'm trying to say here, the world, I think we could have a better story set in this same world. For example, in Perdido Street Station, we have this fantastic build-up and we've got this great setting, and then my main complaint was that it just turned into a bug hunt, and it was literally about half of the way, maybe, you know, three-eighths of the way through or something like that. We get through the book and then I'm like, wait a second, this is going to be a bug hunt, isn't it? It's just going to be a monster story. And while I like that, the setting, we could have had so much more in the setting. There was all these political things going on earlier and this whole sort of trying to get the guy to fly and this whole technology thing and this whole magic thing going on. And in the end, it was just, oh, look, there's some bugs and I call it a bug hunt, and people always pick up on this. So yes, that is a reference to Aliens, which is a great film, because that's just a bug hunt, but it's a fantastic one, whereas, like, I wanted more from Perdido Street Station. And this is the same thing in this novel. We've got this, like, say, police procedural. It's a perfectly good story. However, the setting, we could have had so much more than just, like, a noir murder mystery kind of thing going on there, which is a bit of a pity. For example, as we go through the murder mystery, we find out we discover who the murder victim was, and her story is actually far more interesting than the murder mystery story itself, because we find out her full story in the course of the investigation. But the investigation into the story isn't as interesting as her story herself. So what I'd much rather have done is taken her story and just, like, had that, just read that story, and because the person who has been killed, well, again, I'll give it away slightly, isn't from Bejan or Olcoma. She's actually a foreigner. So what I'd have much rather read is her story of her coming into the two cities, discovering the two cities from an outsider's point of view, and maybe we'd have another viewpoint character from the inside of the city as well, and then we could have, like, really explored the two cities and worked out and sort of seen an outside view of it, rather than from someone who's completely fine with the two cities being stuck together. And the revelations that she has and the things that she finds out are far and away as interesting to hold up a story itself. So I thought this telling her story at one step removed, as in the reason why she was killed, I thought was it was there was no need for that because we didn't get a whole lot more of it. We got a great examination of the two cities, and of course it doesn't, all the action doesn't just happen place in one city. It goes, you know, it goes to the other city and then between the cities as well. With Borloo, the detective, and he gets to meet people from both sides, and he meets some outsiders, and he meets some politicians, and all these different kind of things. That's interesting as an exploration, but he's not a very interesting character. Because as a character, he's a bit too powerful. Normally, like your detectives from your noir kind of murder mysteries, they're a bit more underdog, and he's like a top policeman. He's from the extreme crimes unit, and he's got too much access to power. He's got too much access to both sides of the city if he wants it. He can cross from one city to the other a bit too easily, and he's completely knowledgeable about the situation. The only thing he's finding out about is the story of the murder victim, but then, and anything else he finds out about which isn't specifically to do with that, she found out about that anyway. The murder victim found out about that anyway. So it's like we're not getting anything new from Borloo, the main character. He's not that interesting. I guess he's all right as a detective. I'm not that into sort of mystery, like murder mystery and detective fiction, you know, police procedurals and stuff. But it was decently done. However, I can't help but think that there was a better story being told, and there was, but it was always being told at one point removed. So there's some little bits of things about that. Oh, also, talking about the two cities and then there's breach between them, we do meet the breach people, but they're a little bit too nice. I wanted them to be like the SS or the Stasi, because they're like this mysterious force that's being talked about, and I didn't really feel that that their promise was really delivered on. I thought we could have done a bit more there. It was very interesting what happened, but sometimes I'm like, yeah, okay, maybe a little bit more. Talking about the characters, well, I think I've talked about the characters. Really, it's not about the characters, which is, it's a bit straight. The cities are the characters, and it's really great how one of the cities is more sort of Germanic, Austrian kind of city, and the other city is more sort of like Turkish, I guess, a bit more sort of Balkan kind of area. It's very strange. It's obviously set somewhere in Eastern Europe, but and these are just two city-states. They don't really have much territory around them, so it's like Monaco laid over Monaco, or like Liechtenstein laid over Liechtenstein, or, you know, Andorra laid over the top of Liechtenstein. It's that kind of thing, two very small city-state kind of things with not a whole lot of territory around them, and they do have two different characters, but again, because we never really find out too much about the history of them, and because it's set in this sort of another world, more of a fantasy world, not in our world at all, because they've been there for a long time, and it's set very much in like late 20th century, early 21st century, because people have mobile phones and they have internet and things like that, and of course the Berlin Wall has already fallen and things. So, you know, it seems a bit strange that these two cities are there, but they seem to be a bit too isolated from the world as at the same time as they're isolated from each other. I don't know. It's a bit of a strange thing to talk about, but that's it. But they, like I say, they do have a lot of character, but sometimes I wish we could have got to know them a little bit better. So talking about, I talk normally about science and technology in the different novels, but really you don't have any of that there. Mainly the sci-fi elements of it, or the fantasy elements of it, are the interactions between the two cities and Breach and all of that kind of stuff, which is good, but there's no point in me going into it here because there's a whole book written about it, and the way to really understand it is to read the book. And what's the next heading? Writing. There's lots of dialogue. Oh, it's all first person in sort of noir style, which makes it really good for an audiobook, because you've got this first person narration, and you've got one guy talking. It's John Lee. He did the Revelation Space book as well. I guess he does a lot of sci-fi stuff, and it was good voice acting. I actually enjoyed the voice acting in this book a lot better than the voice acting in of the characters I'm talking about here in this book, rather than the way he did the voices in Revelation Space. And the accents are good, and the narration is good, and also the swearing is a lot better. There's a lot of swearing in it, and he does swearing a lot more in this because it's more like first person and it's a bit grittier. He actually just goes with the swearing rather than concentrating on it, which seemed to happen a bit too much in Revelation Space. And the other thing about the writing, which I made a note of this, is that he does, it's a lot of dialogue, plots explained between two characters, which I don't mind. I guess it worked out well. But the thing that got to me a bit too redundant, which I guess he was trying to play in the different themes that he's talking about. But it's all like, oh, I unsaw this and unsaw that. And there's a lot of the jargon about the two cities. And then it's like, I had trouble seeing this. And then I saw this, but then I looked away. And then this one caught my eye, but then I looked away. And there was this thing, but then I didn't see that. And I'm like, yeah, okay, I get it. It does get a bit redundant, which does sort of plague the pacing at some points. At some points you just want to get on with it, and then he's like, oh no, and now I want to talk a bit more about this, about the city, which again came into it in Perdido Street Station. The action suddenly ramps up, and then you've got like 18 pages worth of description of another squalid part of the city, and that happens here as well. It's sort of like, yeah, okay, we get here, oh, and now let me talk a bit about this, about the two cities, or and then I went here and did this, and every journey is about Borlu seeing this and then unseeing that and then unseeing this, and then he crosses over to the other side of the city and then he's unseeing everything from the other point of view, and so that gets a little bit tiring. But again, it was good there because that really plays into like the main ideas, and that is, again, last heading here that I have is the themes of the novel. And I do think, of course, the thematic exploration here is very much about the split cities and people's perceptions of the places that they live. I talked about that a bit before, but also there's this idea of why people would want to come and live in these two cities. There's a lot about immigration it's not just us, you know, ignoring people in the same city, but then it's like, why would people want to come here? You know, I always thought, well, you know, in when Berlin was in two cities, why did people come to Berlin, to live in Berlin, either in a city surrounded on all sides by East Germany and like the enemies in the Cold War, or why would you even want to move to East Berlin on the other side, where, you know, it's they can't get from one side to the other, and it's one of those strange things, but people still do live there, and I guess that's it, and people do move there because the opportunity is there, and it's just one of those strange ideas where you kept bringing it up throughout the novel and never really explained it too much. And it's like all these people nationalistic, and you get like this national front of Olkoma, or this national front of Bejan, and you think, well, what's so great about the city? But then it's a city. It's where they live. It's their home. It's their national identity. And of course, they're going to fight for it, even though other people are trying to unify the two cities at the same time. But apart from like the whole idea of the split cities and the split identity and the whole like, yeah, we see people every day and we unsee them, we unsee the parts of the city outside of our social sphere. Apart from that, there wasn't a whole lot to sink the teeth into thematically, which is a real shame. And that brings me on to my conclusion of this review, is that this could have been a great novel. I'm not kidding when I brought up the parallels to it, like 1984, because we've got this fantastic setting, which is new to me. The whole idea of two cities overlaid, gross topically, but then being divided at the same time is a fantastic idea. And there could have been so much into it. But we never really get into the political ramifications of this. The story never takes on that wider view as, say, 1984, where at the end of it, you know, well, you know, it's the guy is broken and it carries on. Or Fahrenheit 451, where everything goes up in smoke at the end and everything changes at the end. Or these other sort of great science fictional looks, views of at politics and at the world and things like that. And I think that with this setting, China Mieville could have done that, but yet he didn't. It failed. He just settled for a detective story, a murder mystery. Whereas if he'd have taken it to a wider place, and there's hints of this in the novel as well, which I don't want to give away. And I'm thinking there is a bigger story here. And I'm thinking maybe in the future he could write more novels set in this city or on a larger scale, on a bigger political scale, where we actually find out more about the history of it and the direction that it's going. And instead of concentrating just so much on this narrow focus, take a wider view of the city and the wider view of the politics being presented there. And we could have a new 1984 or Fahrenheit 451 on our hands, because there is there is the material here. There is the depth here to the setting. And there's glimpses of the depths. Maybe I'm just not reading into it at a deep enough level. However, 1984, when you read a novel like that, it's just laid out for you. And the impact of the language and the impact of the storytelling and the impact of the story and the impact of the technology and the impact of the political regime and the language is all there. And so much of that is in this novel, but yet it just doesn't... It doesn't go through with it. The name of the book, The City and the City, is great. And that's actually a reference to another book that people read within The City and the City. But what it could have been called was like The Body in the City and the City, because it really doesn't have that wider view or that wider take or those wider themes. I mean, they're there, but it just doesn't deliver. So overall, I'm going to give this novel three and a half stars. Meaning that it's very good, but in some ways, but it sort of let down a bit. And in the end, it was just average. And as I started reading it, I thought this could be fantastic. And it really could have been, but it really didn't. It just didn't deliver by the end of it. The elements were there. The story was good and everything was great. And I really don't have any complaints about it. Just a complaint about like the lack of delivery. And again, it's the same kind of problem that I had with Perdido Street Station, except this book was a lot shorter, so the disappointment at the end of it, even though I had still a lot to like about it, it wasn't 900 pages or however long Perdido Street Station was. So by the end of it, I wasn't sick of it like I was at Perdido Street Station. It just didn't deliver. And so that's my take on this. So if it comes down to this one and The Wind-Up Girl, which I think is I can't remember the list of the Nebula Award nominees, I would probably pick The Wind-Up Girl over The City and the City, even though they're both good books and you should probably read both of them. But because you probably might get a lot more out of this book, The City and the City, than I did. Anyway, thanks a lot for listening to that review. The next novel that I'm going to review, which I'll be reviewing in around about maybe 20 minutes, is called R. Scott Bakker, by R. Scott Bakker, called The Thousandfold Thought. It's the last novel in the Prince of Nothing series. It's a fantasy novel, but I'll review it anyway. But I'll review the entire series, not just this novel. And then the other novel that I finished reading just last night is called Transition by Ian Banks. Not Ian M. Banks. Again, it's one of these weird kind of things. You're like, is this fantasy? Is this science fiction? But it definitely fits in with the science fiction kind of ideas that I want to explore and review on this podcast. So I'll probably review that in maybe about an hour once I've thought about it a bit more. Anyway, as I said, thanks for listening. Email me luke@juggler.net. Otherwise, with any book reviews and comments or anything about this podcast or anything, go to goodreads.com/Luke Burridge. You can keep up with my reading, except at the moment because I'm on a cruise ship and I've not had really proper internet access for the past week and a half, except for emails. What else? Oh yes, follow me on Twitter. I'm Luke Burridge on Twitter, @LukeBurridge on Twitter. And there's normally something else I say, but I can't remember what it is. And read my blog, lukeburridge.com/blog, with all the updates. Again, no updates for 2 weeks, but there will be quite a lot going up there. A lot about my travels and a new podcast that I'm working on as well about my travels. And also read my novel, because I released a new novel. I had some good feedback about it, but check out the Monster Story Conference, and you can find that at lukeburridge.com/fiction.html or etc. You'll be able to find it, no problem at all. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time.